he was talking about like how it was a great recommendation from Larry, and that he really liked it, and it was like one of the best post-apocalyptic books that he had read.
It's definitely one of the most believable ones.
Yeah. And then he said, except for the blue people, I don't get the blue people. And that started a whole conversation about like people who take too much colloidal silver and turn blue. Larry showed it to him on the computer. He's like, he's looking at Papa Smurf and Jules. He's like, oh my gosh, my mind, my world has been opened up to me.
Warlords of Appalachia is one of the few comics I've actually sat down and read here lately. And, you know, just being so busy and all. But I really enjoyed it, you know, and I'm, of course, a fan of the genre.
I've heard things about it, but I haven't read it myself. I've heard some good stuff from Gomer about it.
And so, and
Jules,
the blue people, in the book there's this drug that's made, and if users of the drug will eventually turn blue once they use it so much. But it just kind of makes them like these weird methed out zombie looking Smurfs. Yes.
La 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 la. Brains.
Oh, but it's a good book.
Yeah.
Nonetheless,
instead of the Smurfs being eaten by Gargamel, the Smurfs eat Gargamel.
This, of course, is Geeks of the Square Table, episode 142. I'm your host, Lawrence of America. With me today is...
Not Gomer. And Adam.
Also, Jules is not here either.
Jules is not here. Jules came in, got his stuff, was amazed by people with blue skin. But the traffic is atrocious today because of that wreck on 65.
Oh yeah, those of you who are listening to this in the Tennessee region might have heard about the collision of a couple of semis. One of them was full of diesel. Unfortunately, I believe one of the drivers died.
Mm-hmm.
But the diesel caught on fire and it melted the asphalt.
Yeah.
And melted like part of the truck and... but anyway, they had to shut down the highway. So.
Yeah, it was like right up here at Millersville.
Right. I think it was at Bethel Road, exit 101, is what I was told.
I heard it was mile marker 100, but yeah, that would be pretty much
so. There. But what from my understanding, it's between like exit 98 to 108 is shut down.
Oh, so basically from Millersville to White House.
Yeah. Which, those of you familiar with the Nashville region and the Kentucky region are familiar that 65 North is a major intersection for shipping. So, which causes all these truck drivers to try and divert through local backwood roads.
Oh, yeah. It was... I left early, and I still got...
And this has traffic. Been going on all day.
Yeah. You know? I mean, I live up in Portland, and I-65... I had never seen so many semi-tractor trailers on I-65, 109, before.
That's why, because they were being diverted down Long Hollow.
Down Long Hollow.
And going out. So basically, having to go an hour out of the way. Big pain in the...
You know what.
Yeah. But... Yeah. So it's been kind of a slow traffic day towards the evening, as a lot of people have been... getting caught in that.
Yeah.
But what I was going to say, and I just realized I think I said the word butt like five times.
But you won't say behind. the other word behind.
Yeah. Anyway, we've got this. The news preview come out this month talking about stuff that's going to come out in January as per a classic tradition. We were all kind of just going through it and... seeing what we liked, we noticed a couple of interesting things.
Oh, do we want to talk about that?
The Gimp Suit Potato Head?
Yeah.
I think we'd be in trouble if we didn't talk about the Gimp Suit Potato
Head. Yeah, in the early section of the previews where it had, like, you know, the toy chest with other things, there is a picture of seven Mr. Potato Head figures dressed up as Marvel characters. And so we have the Vision, Hawkeye, the Falcon, Doctor Strange, Daredevil, Black Widow, and Black Panther. Black Panther, of particular note, looks like a gimp. And if you don't know what a gimp is, Google it.
He looks like an extra off of
American Horror Show.
Yeah. American Horror Show. Yeah. Yeah. Which first they season. Did actually make a Funko Pop gimp suit from American Horror.
They did. Actually, yeah, I do collect Funko, and I don't have that one in particular, but yes, they did make a gimp Funko. But, you know, and the bad part is that the motif of Black Panther does not help to dissuade you from thinking that it looks like a gimp. And the other funny part is they put him right next to the Black Widow. So, you know, a redhead in a skin-tight suit in a gimp.
Well, and, you know...
Naughty boy.
They went out of their way to give everybody else a mouth, but they didn't give Black Panther a mouth. Oh, and yes. That would have helped.
That might have helped
a little bit, yeah.
That might have helped.
Because, like, that's... even the Daredevil has a mouth, and does he have a mouth in his costume?
It is basically like a Batman cowl, is essentially what it is.
But, you know, it's totally not happening when they do that. Say the same. What's the safe word?
I do like that Joker there, that Kai, Play Arts Kai variant, Rogues Gallery, the Joker figure. Basically a Joker Batman dressed Joker. Up as Batman.
Yeah.
That looks pretty good, too.
Yeah.
But I did see something in the Dark Horse section. Scout Comics had published Hench Girl, and Dark Horse has picked up the rights to publish a collected trade of
Scout Comics, they kind of got on the map there for a second with This Is Our Land, where apparently aliens bombed Germany back to the Stone Age, and these people are fighting aliens in the future with
Stone Age
level technology.
But Hinch Girl was a pretty good series. The last issue came out last month.
And, of course, I probably have that all kind of backwards, but...
That series was really fun towards the end because she, Mary, tried to save her parents at some, like, big luncheon that honored her, and she's, like, the only member of her family that doesn't have superpowers, and she ends up, like, killing the villain on TV, broadcast TV. so she gets a hold of essentially a time machine and goes back in time where she's a child and she's making all these predictions to her mother, and her mother thinks she has she can see the future and has superpowers that way. That's her superpower, she sees the future. And when she goes back, she kind of messes up things, and when she comes back forward in time, things have changed. Like, you know, she told people to watch for a stock called Yahoo and Google, and in that world they don't exist. And towards the end of the series, it's revealed that her sister has been the one that's been getting her out of trouble. Her sister has donned a third secret identity, or another secret identity, to basically keep her out of harm's way. Because her sister is also like a superpowered individual. And at the end of it, it does kind of leave off in a cliffhanger, because there's a girl in the book, and I forget her name, but her superpower is essentially she can make carrot people. And at the end of issue 12, it's kind of they jump forward like a year or so, and they're fighting carrot people. So it's really weird. So I don't think we're done with Hench Girl. I would like to see a continuation of it, but Dark Horse has picked up the trade. So I don't know if Dark Horse has picked up.
Well, that's an interesting move. I wonder if it's still going to bear the Scout Comics logo, or if Scout. I mean,
if this is the art for the cover, that it may not.
Yeah. So,
but it's interesting because, you know, it's from Hench Girl is a Scout Comics book. So, like I said, will it roll over to Dark Horse? Will Dark Horse start publishing it, or will Scout Comics continue to publish, like, maybe Volume 2?
Well, and then also, you know, with these smaller creator lines, you know, if the creator controls the rights, they often like to move up to bigger lines. This is just, a weird jump from a micro publisher to a small publisher. Yeah. And of course, Dark Horse, really, I mean, they're far from, you know, some guy publishing comics out of their basement.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Dark Horse is probably...
They're well-established. They've been around at least since the 90s, if not earlier.
They're closing on probably 30 years now.
Yeah, I think they've actually been around longer than Image, haven't they?
Yes, they were around... Image was in 92, and I was getting Dark Horse books back in, like, 89.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But Dark Horse books back then was, like, you know, anthology books like Dark Horse Presents, Paul Chadwick's Concrete, Terminator, Predator, and
licensed stuff. I have a Godzilla 1985 comic adaptation at home from Dark Horse.
Was it the one with Art Adams artwork?
I think so. It's really old.
Art Adams did some good Godzilla artwork. Yeah. I would like to see an Art Adams IDW Godzilla.
See, now, of course, a lot of these publishing companies may have existed on other forms other than, as just a publisher. You see that a lot, And it always interests me when, there's a Spider-Man collection that came out this week, published by IDW, And, of course, that being a classic Marvel book. The fact that Marvel doesn't have the rights to publish Disney comics for the classic Disney characters,
Because that seems very strange that Marvel owns, or is owned by Disney but doesn't publish Disney characters like that. And it's not IDW that does the Disney books, is it?
Well, it is somebody else. But, that was something established before they bought Marvel or whatever, I believe.
Like magazines, like Star Wars, something like centered around Star Wars that is not published by Marvel. You have Titan Comics does a Star Wars.
Does the Star Wars Rebels magazine, the fanzine stuff. Yeah.
So that's a very weird, you're right. That is a very weird distribution material sometimes. What else is there?
I like how they have Daredevil 16 in front of Daredevil 15 in the previews. It's interesting.
Oh, man.
Maybe the order it comes out.
Maybe they put this previews out where you have to look at it like a manga.
Probably.
You have to go from left to right. Oh, what else? So, you had dental work lately?
Oh, yeah. I don't know if it's affecting the sound of my voice or anything like that, but yeah, I had three teeth pulled.
Wow! Three teeth.
Ow is right, yeah. I had an abscess tooth, and I had two others that need to come out, but that one had to come out, so get them all done. And of course, the one that had to come out... because of the infection, they couldn't really numb it properly. And it was either, they got halfway through, they were able to get half of it out, and they're like, either we can go ahead and yank it out now, or we can wait for the infection to come down and try it again, go through it all. And I was like, yeah, just do it, And they yanked it out. I screamed.
Even numbed, you screamed. It was that.
The last tooth, it wasn't numbed.
Oh,
I'm sure you did scream.
Yeah, and they had to break it up into four pieces. And that was
not pleasant.
They've officially Briggs Land in development for a AMC TV show.
AMC picking up all those comic book TV shows.
I was telling people about it. I was like, there's rumors, they're in talks. This will fit that Sons of Anarchy spot. This is going to be something that they'd be interested in. And I don't know how that'll affect the comic, but it's one of those things that's weird. We saw the same thing with Outcast. Outcast is still going strong. I don't watch the TV show or read the comic.
Yeah.
And it boomed real quick, and then it just kind of, now it's back to its steady numbers.
Well, it's really weird, because they're making this TV show for this book, but it doesn't even have its first trade out yet, does it?
No, it's
That's what they're advertising. Issue 6 and the trade are coming out in January.
And when's the Briggs Land TV show supposed to
be? Well, they're just in development, quote-unquote.
So that it could be
a couple of
years. Like, at least 1 or 2 years.
It could be a couple years, but even then, at that point, they'll have what? 4, 5 trades.
Two arts.
If they keep it up.
If they keep it up. Yeah, exactly.
But it's a good premise. We saw that with Outcast. They'd already signed the paperwork to make that into a TV show before the first episode or issue had even hit the shelves.
That's another Kirkman property, wasn't it?
Outcast. Oh, yeah.
Right.
That Kirkman making that money.
Yeah. Why do I even write comic books anymore? I just make TV shows.
He writes comic books to sell TV shows.
Ah, so he's another one of those Rick Morender guys.
Yes.
But no,
it's not Warren Ellis.
Warren Ellis.
I'm sorry, Rick.
Warren Ellis. Yeah. Rick Remender is doing that, though. Yeah. He's making a Deadly Class TV show.
Ah.
He's trying to shop a pilot for that. So.
Yeah, I want to see the Chew animation.
Adult Swim?
Not Adult Swim, but Felicia Day and Stephen something Chow. What is his name?
Is it the guy that
plays Glenn?
Stephen Ewan.
Stephen Ewan. They, a while back.
Yeah, he needs a job now, so.
I wasn't going to say anything.
Well, I wasn't going to say anything. We kind of knew where it was going if you read the book.
Yeah. The sad thing, I'll get on that later. So. They voiced an animated pilot for Chew like a year or two ago.
That'd be great. That'd be a good animated.
Now, is it like you can find this pilot on YouTube?
No, you can't find the pilot on YouTube. But they've both, or Felicia Day has mentioned it publicly that they're shopping around for it and blah, blah, blah. I even wrote an article on Outright Geekery about this.
Oh, man. If Larry wrote an article, big.
Yeah.
It's important.
No, but nothing has ever came of it. And I do definitely think it will be... it would be a good premise.
I think it would be a bit special effects heavy, but Black Hammer might make a good TV show. And Department H as well.
Is that really where we're headed, though? Because it seems like the comics are more just a medium for movies and TVs nowadays.
To gauge how the audience will react to this new property. Comic I read once where it's like some kid was like at a comic shop and he's like, you know, Avengers, Batman, Superman, Justice League. He's like, man, all these comics are just based on movies, and somebody's like, dude, really? Well,
honestly, at this
point... Actually, that's the Foxtrot I have taped up by the register. Yeah.
honestly, at this point, I mean, with Disney owning Marvel and Warner Brothers owning DC, all the comics are just, you know, shopping grounds for future movie
ideas. AT&T is going to buy...
Yeah, I did see that.
Warner Brothers. So can we officially rename the AT&T building the Batman building?
Come on,
you know that definitely could be a thing.
Let's paint it black. Put the Batman symbol in there and have like two lights that light up at night. It's like, I am the protector of this city.
Now we can tint a few of the windows just so they glow yellow at night. Yeah, you know, have the logo.
Yeah, they can do that. There's like a building in Nashville that writes letters with their lights.
It could definitely be done.
yeah, it's already been called the Batman Building for a long time.
Forever, yeah.
Let's just officially call it the Batman Building.
Yeah, Batman AT&T, how can I help you?
There was a... Oh, what is it? I noticed back here, just jumping ahead a little bit, there's a bunch of comics with, like, sharks in them. There's like one, it's just little independent publishers and all that. There's like one where it's a hook jaw, then there's another called a toll, and then there's one more that I think called white. seems to be a reoccurring theme here. Is sharks the new thing?
I guess so.
Maybe.
This God Country from Image Comics looks really interesting. It talks about a fella named Emmett Quaylen, who's a old widower rattled by dementia, who's just not a problem for his children, but his violent outbursts are more than the local cops can handle. When a tornado levels his home as well as the surrounding West Texas town, a restored Quaylen rises from the wreckage. The enchanted sword at the eye of the storm gives him more than a sound mind and body, however. That sounds kind of interesting. Who's the artist? We have writer Donnie Cates, Jeff Shaw's on the artwork, Jason Wordy, and John J. Hill. I'm not familiar with Donnie Cates or Jeff Shaw.
I've never heard of Donnie Cates either.
So this is something interesting. But it kind of goes with that whole theme with like stories like Birthright and Monstrous, Image puts out like those kind of books. Mm-hmm. So it kind of sounds like it has more like a Thor vibe to it, because he's got a magical sword that he's wielding.
It
is a really big sword by the artwork. It's like a
cloud level sword.
There's like a rainbow tornado in the picture.
That's good. I like rainbow tornadoes.
Yeah. Hey, did you guys see the Sun Dog today?
I did not.
Oh.
The Sun Dog?
It's an atmospheric phenomenon where, the sun is reflected in the clouds. But so you have the sun over in one area of the sky, and then you'll have, like, it looks kind of like a ball or another sun in the sky. And sometimes you can have, like, 360 degree of it. I saw one today while I was in traffic.
You say Sun Dog, I immediately think of the short story by Stephen King. It's actually a really cool short story.
What's it about?
A cursed Polaroid camera.
Well, that's interesting. That sounds very Stephen King.
Yes. If you'd name it, Stephen King has wrote a story about one of them being cursed.
There's a whole movie like that called Needful Things.
Yeah, yeah.
They're bringing back They're Not Like Us.
They're starting a new story arc of Postal and Manifest Destiny.
Which I know Gomer would probably get into Manifest Destiny. It's that whole Lewis and Clark cryptozoology and supernatural.
He really does like that book.
He does like this book.
Yeah.
Well, let's see what else is there.
I don't think we've seen Gomer today.
He said he came in earlier.
Did he come in early this morning before I got here?
Yeah.
Let's see. Wayward number 20 comes out in January, and that's the end of that arc, which Wayward's been pretty good. Issue 16 finally did some things that I've been waiting for a very long time. Because the premise is that Rory's in Japan, and basically the mythical creatures in Japan are in an uproar because humans are starting to exhibit supernatural abilities. And so they go to war with the humans, these new superhuman people. But basically, if the Japanese supernatural exists, then supernatural entities and mythical creatures in other cultures should exist. And we finally get that in issue 16, where dear old dad teleports Rory home to Ireland.
Let's see some leprechauns.
I saw a book the other day, and it was Jim Zub was the writer, and I was like, where did I know that name? And he writes Wayward.
Was it Glitterbomb?
No, it was like some weird, like, kids book.
Hmm. It's a Disney book, ain't it? The Imagination Train or something like
that? No. This is old, old.
Okay.
Yeah, I was like cleaning out back issues or whatever. I'm like, I know this. I think it was like Sonic or something.
Really?
Yeah. Just
because I know he wrote Pathfinder. And he does some stuff for Marvel, and usually it's like some Disney title, like it's an Imagination was a Figment is what it is.
Figment. Yeah, it's Figment.
I did not think that Youngblood was part of Marvel or part of Image anymore. I thought they had gone and done their own thing and left Image.
Nope, he brought back Youngblood.
Because I remember Rob Liefeld talking about bringing back Youngblood, but he wasn't going to be the artist on it.
And they brought back another book too. Don't remember.
Is it Shadowhawk or Cyberforce? No, Cyberforce never left Image.
Cyberforce never left him.
Because Cyberforce is Top Cow. Top Cow is pretty much a flagship. Wildcats went, and Wildstorm went to DC when Jim Lee went to DC.
And they're relaunching the Wildstorm line at DC.
Is it going to be independent?
It's going to be independent, and it's going to be curated by Warren Ellis.
Well,
that's good.
Yeah, and of course, the Young Animals thing, their newest imprint, has been doing well. Now.
I did pick up Shade the Changing Girl, and
it was too weird.
It's kind of weird, but I do like Doom Patrol.
All of those books are weird, though. I picked up Cave Carson Has a Cybernetic Eye. That was weird, too. All of those books have been...
I think but it's Changing Girl is a bit more weirder than I want.
I think they dropped a bunch of acid before they wrote that line of books.
It's being curated by Gerard Way.
Yeah.
And he has wrote a few weird books so far.
The Umbrella Academy was pretty good. I do give him props on that one.
And so I think they're wanting it to appeal to a non-traditional comic book market, which may be a smart...
It is.
I've had new faces coming in looking for those books.
That's good.
Because of Gerard Way.
Question and is, though, are they going to keep those books, though?
Well, when Umbrella Academy first came out,
it was a sleeper hit.
That's because when his fans saw it, heard about it, through other means than non-traditional comic means, because he would go on tour and promote it.
But
they would come in looking for it, having to have it.
Yeah, but I do remember when Umbrella Academy came out, it was a bit of a sleeper hit.
It did.
But then the question begs, is it because of its My Chemical Romance fans coming in here getting his stuff, or is it... do they strike you as traditional comic book fans?
Well, like I said, I know there's been some MCR fans coming in to get stuff, and that's fine.
Jules. He was wearing a Chemical Romance shirt today.
Yeah, if that gets
them... Chemical Romance, or was it on my... was it the robot one?
I believe it said My Chemical Romance on it.
No, there's a shirt Jules and I got that's... like My Robotic Romance or something like that. Maybe that Chrome Dome and Rewind on it.
This did not. I don't think this had Chrome Dome and Rewind on it. But maybe.
But he could be a My Chemical Romance super fan.
He's probably got like a little altar to Gerard Way in his house somewhere.
Well, I'm sorry. If you get someone to come in, for any reason, looking after any book, they're going to see the other books.
Oh yeah.
So. Yeah, and that's a good thing, especially if it's somebody that wouldn't normally come in. As long as you don't live up to the stereotypical, as long as your comic store doesn't live up to the stereotypical, creepy fat guys, dank, dark, musty smell, and scare them away.
Okay. Yeah, I've visited a couple of shops like that from time to time.
That old creepy, image that we all have in our head of the comic book stores in the 80s.
Yeah.
As long as you don't live up to that reputation, hey, you'd be doing okay.
That's a pretty low bar to set for yourself, though, don't you think?
Well, right. it is. But, I'm just saying,
I just thought what you said was funny. there's one. Atoll. One of those shark books I was talking about.
I guess people are fans of Jaws.
Fans of Jaws. Jaws ripoffs. You know, sharks are the new zombies, I guess. Mindless killing machines.
I suppose.
A hunger for human flesh when it's in the water. Unless they form a tornado. We need to just stop right there.
So, local boy Eric Powell and Albatross Funny Books, Hillbilly's been doing well. Mm. You know, they have a Spook House book that I think actually starts here soon.
Here's another one. White.
Devil Dews. So, one thing you point out, usually you see this with movies all the time, you know, where there's one genre gets big and then you'll see a whole wave of copycats.
Yeah.
So what was the book that got big that these are copying?
I think maybe it's just trying to appeal with the Sharknado cheese.
Yeah,
maybe.
Or we've had a spat of shark movies here.
We did have a couple that came out.
We had with The Shallows or something like that.
Yeah, the one with, what's her name? Ryan Reynolds' wife. Blake Lively. That wasn't a bad movie.
So what did you pick up today, Adam?
Too much.
Ah, me too. Have you been reading this Lake of Fire?
I have not, but I've heard it's pretty good.
It's pretty good. It's basically...
I've been waiting to pick that one up on in trade.
Medieval knights fighting off an alien invasion. And we don't know if it was a purposeful alien invasion or if the ship just crashed there by accident and the alien cargo got out. For all we know, the aliens are really livestock. Alien livestock.
Oh, yeah.
And they're just like, oh, new environment. Let's run rampant. That one's pretty good. And I picked up Wayward 17 today. Which, the variant cover for that is absolutely gorgeous. I love that.
Well, that is
Sana Takeda, the artist from Monstrous. That is her. That is a beautiful cover right there. There is an Easter egg. I just seen it. There is an Easter egg to Monstrous in here. A two-tailed cat. If you read Monstrous, you will know what that means. But yeah, and then I picked up Saga.
Oh yeah.
Oh man, I will have to set aside a good amount of time to process this because my heart was a little bit broken last issue with what happened.
That's what that book's good at, though.
Huh?
That's what that book's good at, though, breaking your heart.
Yeah. But and then let's see what else. I got May from Dark Horse. I got some stuff from last week, so I'm not going to mention some of that because it's a mix from this week and last week titles. Because I wasn't able to come in last week. What else is there that I saw that I was really interested in? Oh, yeah, this thing from Tokyo Pop, this riding shotgun. If you go on YouTube and just look right, put in the search field, riding shotgun animation, it'll bring up this like 5-minute animated short, and basically like these two undercover cops, and there's a lot of innuendo in there. But one of the best parts is like one of the bad guys gets a hold of like some bad drugs and he's hallucinating some stuff, and they have it's pretty funny. But Tokyo Pop is actually putting out two volumes of this animated short, so that's pretty interesting.
Jim Henson Storytellers is starting a new miniseries. It'll be coming out in December. It'll be Giants.
Okay. Because isn't the current one Dragons?
Yes.
I did pick up the first issue of that, and I thought that was pretty good, but I had not continued it.
And apparently, I know this will heartbreak you, Munchkin, the comic, mm-hmm. Munchkin, is coming to an end.
Oh,
based
no.
on the card game. Oh. I know.
Oh, no.
I know. I calm your tears. Calm your tears.
Ooh. At least it made it a good 25 issues. That's longer than most Marvel books.
Actually, I need to talk to you after the podcast because I want to put the new She-Hulk book on my pull list.
You mean just Hulk?
Hulk, but She-Hulk. Gray She-Hulk? Or a Red She?
Let's hope it's not Red She. Anything Red Hulk.
The Red Hulk.
Remember, Marvel doesn't see gender anymore.
They still see color, though, right?
but yeah, that...
Yeah, it's all just Hulk is a job title.
Yeah, when they announced this new book, Gomer and I had a discussion, and we thought that they were that it was basically that she was going to become a gray She-Hulk.
Maybe.
And from this artwork right here,
she definitely looks like she can't control her hulking powers.
Unless they've changed it, I seem to remember basically the Gray Hulk was a very intelligent Hulk, very actually in control. Because he was.
That's normal Hulk. This is She-Hulk, though.
Bruce Banner's Gray Hulk was you know, a very smart Hulk, maybe. And it was, you know, the whole merging of the Hulk personalities was it was the Gray Hulk's intelligence with the Green Hulk's strength. But that's like, oh gosh, my head's starting to spin trying to piece all that fun stuff together.
Yeah, they're finally getting to where, you know, part of me is tired of Marvel reboots or whatever, but at least with the Marvel Now number ones, they're at least like, okay, this is a good jumping on point here.
Yeah,
they did. And it does make my job a little easier.
Yeah, because it's not like a, you know, like, oh, in 2 years' time we had three number ones of the same volume. That's great, because Ms. Marvel number 12 is now Marvel Ms. Marvel number one now.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even though it's number one in that particular story arc.
But not number one in the actual book.
And so, they kind of continue the numbering.
Yes.
So that's always good. So, we were talking earlier, Adam. You and I have both seen Shin Godzilla.
We have.
And what did you think of it?
I thought it was a very interesting Godzilla movie.
It was. I think it was a very good retelling of the 1954 Godzilla in a lot of respects.
In a lot of respects, I felt like it was definitely an interesting movie because I felt like it dealt a lot more with how the government reacts to... Because that's what the whole movie was about. Yeah. It was about how the government reacts to a disaster like Godzilla showing up.
Yes.
But
that's the Japanese government.
That's the Japanese government.
But how like, you know, a corporate structure might work. You know, they have committees upon committees come on committees, and then they have a spokesperson.
Problems with bureaucracy.
Yes.
Yeah, and I felt like the 1954 was more of a personal tale.
Yeah.
But it was definitely a very interesting movie. I will say that it moved. A lot of the dialogue moved really, really fast. So if you're not a fast reader, it might be a little hard to figure out what's going on.
And they do get to Godzilla fairly quickly.
They do. They do.
They don't like, you know, linger it out. Oh, there's this monster out there. It's like almost like within the first 10 minutes, he's there.
Not the Godzilla you know and love is there, but
a Godzilla
is there.
But
which I didn't mind that Godzilla. I thought for the type of movie that it was,
it worked really
well. It worked well.
But there was like a. But still, it had that same message from the 1954 movie where it's like, you know, mankind created this nuclear monster and now we have to live with it.
Yes.
And how they defeated Godzilla is really was really clever. And I've seen some fan theories about, like, how this new Godzilla might be able, or this new, if it spawns into sequels and stuff, how other monsters could come about. Because obviously, at the end of it, he was budding something off of him.
They were skeleton creatures that look sort of like humanoid Godzilla creatures. It was weird.
But the way they talked about it was like Godzilla can mutate almost at will. So there was like one guy was talking about how, you know, it could sprout rings and spread itself across the world. And a fan theory is basically like these buddings, these skeleton things could fall off Godzilla and do those, so one of them could eventually become Rodan. And one of them might, you know, merge with two other ones and become King Ghidorah. and just some. It was a really interesting fan theory. Mm-hmm. I don't know how they're going to take it with them if they make a sequel for it, which they said they will.
Of course they will. I mean, yeah. Isn't it the highest grossing Japanese made Godzilla movie ever?
Yes, and they actually, it was when they originally announced it, it was a 1 week engagement from like October 11th to the 18th.
Yes,
and they actually expanded it a week.
Oh wow! Yeah, that definitely shows that it's doing.
I did read somewhere that they did expand it out to at least what is. It would have been yesterday.
Yeah, it would have been. I thought the Godzilla looked great, especially considering that he was all CG this time. No man in a rubber suit, which it sort of depressed me a little bit, but he still looked really good.
He did look really good. But it's not the first time they've used a CG Godzilla before. Like
Big
Man Tokyo had a dream sequence where Godzilla showed up, and that Godzilla was CGI.
Oh yeah,
but it was the classic Godzilla. A more classic looking Godzilla, but I actually liked his first form a lot because
the googly eyes,
because he when the biologist the
it made sense. He looked like a chicken that had just come out of an egg.
Yeah, something like an arm, like a wingless chicken or something with gills.
Yeah,
but yeah, it or more along the lines of an eel.
Probably.
What I felt he looked more like, but, you know, the biologist was saying, like, it looks like a lungfish with legs. And, like, you know, well, when it comes on land, it'll die. And then it's like, it's supporting its own weight right now. But, yeah, there was the whole message about, like, the bureaucracy in there. Because after the first landing, one of the guys was like, they were inspecting the damage, and one of the guys was like, it came on land for 2 hours, and we did nothing. And it was just like, oh, snap.
Yeah. No, my favorite scenes in the movie are the scenes where it shows how bad the bureaucracy is. Like the scene where there's a scene where they have all these helicopters and they're getting ready to attack Godzilla. And it just goes through the line of bureaucracy up to the top. And then it goes all the way back down to the bottom. And then it goes up and down again.
And then the old man...
And they do absolutely nothing.
The old man and the little carrying the little lady on his back. And they're like, stop! Don't even fire. Oh, this is cool.
Oh yes,
Alpha Trion.
Alpha Trion. They have an Alpha Trion
for the headmasters.
I saw an Omega Supreme. They're making again, which looked amazing.
There is a Fortress Maximus.
Yes, a Fort Max. He is huge.
He is big, but he's like $150 too. So he's within a good striking distance for a price range.
Yes.
I did like it, and I was really tickled that it came to the States.
Oh yeah, my only problem with that movie was the canned American actors, but you know, yeah, they were terrible. But for some reason, it still had that same like Godzilla charm to it.
Payback time.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's so bad, but it makes it funny and it gives the movie something else.
It kind of also like introduces like a whole international aspect to it that you rarely see in Godzilla movies. Like the best international effort I ever seen from a Godzilla movie was like Godzilla versus Biollante, and there was like some Arabian country. In the Godzilla universe.
Oh, man, yeah. And then Godzilla 1985, they have the Soviet Union and the United States in there arguing back and forth.
Yeah, because there was that discussion about, like, we want to, you know, there's discussion in the UN about taking the Godzilla situation out of the hands of Japan and turning it over to Russia or the UN. It's like Russia and China are pushing that, and the United States is, like, backing Japan, but, like oh, if they don't do this, it's your fault.
Pretty much.
But yeah, there, it did kind of. I felt like, you know, the Japanese girl who was supposed to be American, like some assistant to the ambassador, she kind of took away from
she
stuff.
She was bad, and I mean,
but the bad part,
her bad part was she. They insisted on her character speaking English throughout the movie, and she wasn't good at speaking English. Let's just get that out of the way. But then she has this whole thing at the end where she's trying to be president of the United States by the time she's 30, but I'm pretty sure you need to know how to speak English.
Yeah.
A.
It's 35.
It's 35. 35. B. You have to be a natural born citizen to run for president.
But she was.
She was a natural born citizen.
Okay.
But
she was the daughter of a governor.
She was like the daughter of some but, like. governor or ambassador.
Ambassador,
so,
something.
So she was fluent in Japanese, and they were using her as the liaison between the Japanese government and the American government. And she did, like, she would speak fluent Japanese. And then she's like, okay, go.
It's like just like a random line of English, but broken like English.
But like the Americans, because like the Americans and the Japanese team up, and like the Americans are like with the that group that's the anti-Godzilla group, and they're like, it's the end of the world as we know it. I still love Payback Time, but the best line from that movie is, oh, the noodles are soggy.
Yeah.
Oh, man. But the Japanese lead actress, she's in that live action Attack on Titan, and I think the Japanese lead actor is also in the live action Attack on Titan.
I haven't seen that one.
That is brutal.
I'm sure it is. The show is brutal.
The movie is like, you know, the show is brutal, and then the movie is like live action brutal.
Oh yeah.
So it's like, have you ever seen Dead Alive?
I have. Yes.
It's like Dead Alive brutal. I kick ass for the Lord.
Oh. So, has everybody here seen Sunday's Walking Dead?
I haven't seen it, but I don't care.
All right, no spoilers.
Okay.
What did you think about it?
You know, it's a hard thing to talk about with no spoilers, but I feel like they kind of undercut themselves by they went to the well twice, and they sort of, you know,
left you a little disappointed.
A little disappointed. Yeah,
I felt the same way. I felt it was not a good episode to get me hooked for the season.
Yeah, and it's a very rough episode to get through. I mean, the whole episode is just nasty.
Not one of their better season starts.
No, and it leaves a real bad taste in your mouth. And honestly, if they were going to go the way they went, they should have just had that probably at the end of last season.
Right, this episode felt like the last 5 minutes of last season.
Yeah.
Stretched out. And a bunch of other stuff, yeah, stretched out into a full episode.
Yeah.
And that really...
Well, and really what angers me about this episode is it feels like it's jerking, you know, the audience around, trying to fool them
into thinking
some one thing, and then just going back and doing what we all thought was going to happen anyway.
Exactly.
I never thought for a moment that they would deviate much from that.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I haven't seen it, but I know enough. I've heard enough about it to know they didn't deviate.
Let's jump to the spoiler portion, and if you don't want to be spoiled, jump ahead 10 minutes of this podcast. All right. So, I actually called this like 3 months ago, talking to a couple. There's only two characters that were ready to die.
Yeah.
Because of how Kirkman writes, you know, mm-hmm. and they have to have, you know, they've had their big epiphanies.
It's okay to say their names now, right?
Yeah.
See, Abraham was okay to die because he was a character who didn't mean nothing.
And his comic death was not kind of very
but he also,
good.
He actually went out like a punk.
Yeah. Well, his death didn't mean nothing, but he also wasn't one of the untouchables. He wasn't like a Michonne or a Daryl or anything like that, so him dying was totally okay.
He didn't have plot armor.
Exactly. So that made total sense. But then, you know, to kill him off, and then just to swerve, because that's the only reason why he died, was to swerve everybody watching the show.
Well,
misdirection.
Okay, so, exactly. So, in the comic now, Glenn had become a total, you know, pansy, a coward who refused to take any risks because he had, you know, he had everything to live for. He had a wife, a kid, everything. So, he refused to take any chances. So, he was ready to die in the comic. Now, in the show, they did something similar to that, like Abraham. They gave him that, oh, I'm willing to take all these risks because I don't care if I live or die. And Sasha was the same way.
She was the other character who could have.
could have been.
But they basically, she wasn't.
But you can't kill she two wasn't quite, characters in one episode.
Yeah, she wasn't ready. She hasn't gone through. But he decided that he wanted to live and wasn't going to take the stupid risk and blah, blah, blah. So it was like he was ready to die. He had made his epiphany. He'd turn around. Yeah, if you notice, usually after some character makes some big breakthrough, like they're in therapy, a weird zombie therapy, they usually die.
Yeah.
That's the worst kind of therapy that there is.
Now you died.
We have no more story to write with you. Goodbye. You are the weakest link. So I knew he was going to die, and that also...
That's why Rick never dies. He's just constantly fucked up the whole time.
Yeah.
Well, and of course...
can you imagine when Rick has his epiphany?
No, because he'll never have it, because the show will go on forever. Actually, no. I do feel like this is really... This episode is probably a big turning point for this series. I could feel this... I could see this episode... I mean, I don't think the show is going to... really get hurt all that much. It's still going to be a strong show. It's still going to last a couple more seasons, but this is definitely feels like the beginning of the end to me.
They really have to make up some strong stuff. I mean, the comic's been down a little.
Yeah. But, I mean, this feels like you have reached the peak. You've reached the really peak point of gore and... You know, just nastiness. And really,
if we're just going for wanting to see people die and all this other stuff, one more. I mean, the scene with Glenn, I mean, that was pretty graphic, well done. You know, good special effects. But you can't constantly be topping this.
No.
And if we're not developing the characters to care about it, if they hit it out of the park with the kingdom. Now, and Ezekiel's pet.
But I can easily see that jumping the shark, though. As soon as you see a tiger walking around.
Yeah.
I mean, just think about where this is now, as opposed to where this show started off as. This show started off as a pretty serious, realistic take on, you know, a zombie thing. And now you have a guy... You're going to have a guy walking around with a tiger pet. You know, it went from very character-driven to now it's a very gimmicky, you know, gore show.
Well, you know, and they definitely made that shift, you know. Gore's about to kill the kill counts and everything like that. I don't know if bringing the tiger into it was the right call. It makes, I mean, the comic, it did it okay, but...
It's a different medium, though. It's a comic book. Right. You can do stuff like that.
Yeah, well, even it still was, even they made it seem plausible in the comic book, you know. But this, the way they've got Sasha with Maggie, I think that makes it... Her future endeavors at the Hilltop. Yeah, for the, I won't spoil it that much for those of you who haven't read ahead in the comics. You know, that makes it those things much more believable in the TV medium. I don't know how they're going to do the kingdom. Y'all have only met the first few people out of it. And they haven't really done it the same way they've done the comic books.
No.
So.
Which isn't necessarily a bad thing. But.
Right. Because, if it were to stay exactly true to the comics, it would come off a little hokey. But, sadly, you know, in that situation, I could definitely see that going down. You know, I could see somebody declaring himself king. You know. I mean, because imagine you now in the comics... I think they'd been around 3 or 4 years by that point. Mm-hmm. Maybe, yeah. Mm-hmm. But,
I thought they were part of the war, then they jumped the time jump.
Well, right, there's the war, then the time jump.
Yeah, but I think...
No, but before
the
kingdom, that... But
the, they were
no,
allied no, no. with the kingdom.
I'm talking about Rick, Rick's, Carl, the zombies have been around.
Okay.
They've gone through maybe 3 or 4 years. I mean, Carl is still like 10, you know. But they're real vague on time in the comics, deliberately so. But... Yeah, of course, they can't keep up with it in the show. You know, they can't keep somebody the same age for years and years and years. And right after this story arc that they're going into now in the comics, there's a big time jump. And they hinted at the time jump at the towards the end of last season with... They showed some stuff that about Alexandria, the future of Alexandria and stuff like that. And they made some hints... For stuff that to stuff that happens after the time jump, so obviously, now even back then it felt the time jump felt a little cheesy in the comics. Mm-hmm. So, and I always thought the time jump was a way to catch the characters' ages up to the show.
It was for Carl,
especially for Carl. You know,
Carl.
And I think you know really once you get
Glenn's favorite food. Oh, that's bad. I should stop.
But, yeah, I don't know. They haven't really done as well with the current arcs of the comic, I think. Now, I haven't been as intrigued as I was by the earlier ones. Well,
I stopped reading roughly... A little bit past this point. A little bit past issue 100 is when I stopped reading the comic
Okay, book. Before the time jump.
Before the time jump, yeah. I didn't make it to the time jump.
I made it. Right, so I'm still reading it.
Yeah. Yeah, and so am I. And I'm reading it on a yearly basis now. I just wait for a new hardcover to come out. But I couldn't do that. I was compelled enough early on that I couldn't do that. I read every issue. When I first started, like well, I started,
first
like
started, it was great.
Like the first issue I bought off the shelf was 19, and I went back and because I had read the first three trades, and like I read every issue as it came out, you know, up until, you know, yeah, probably up until about 100, you know, or a little. Then I was reading the I was reading them in chunks. I'd end up, but yeah. Shortly after that, I just went to reading them once a year. Yeah, I still pick up the monthlies. I don't know why.
Well, I pick them up on a monthly basis, and it's starting to pick up again. The whole Whisperer War is starting.
Yeah, which is the current arc. Yeah, I definitely I've read 13, which is through trade 26 or whatever, and yeah, that
trade 26.
Yeah. Now it's all through issue 156. Yeah, and which they're only a couple issues past that now.
Oh yeah, it's like maybe like 150.
So it did it. The time jump it had been going down for a while, and the time jump actually kind of helped it because you know.
Yeah. Well, my biggest issue with the time jump was that issue that the time jump happens in. You get introduced to a whole cast of new characters, and then by the end of the issue, you're back to Rick, and Rick's crazy.
Well, Rick's always crazy.
Yeah, but he's like beating like somebody on horseback because they weren't watching their post or something.
Sounds like Rick.
Because they introduced this whole cast of characters who had basically created a mobile fortress out of like a shipping container.
Yeah, they took a shipping container, put it on the back of a wagon, and they were you know essentially
wagon.
Yeah, it was like a horse driven carriage, and.
May have been the back of a like a flatbed truck or mm-hmm. where they took the front of it all. I forget how they.
But they had it was basically a shipping container on a horse-driven carriage, and whenever they come across zombies, they'd hide in the shipping container. So the people from Alexandria were driving a very large herd into them. And it, like, killed their horses, flipped their container, and they're like, oh, well, we're sorry about that. You guys can come back with us if you want to stay. And we get introduced to this whole interesting group of people. And then they...
But nothing
they,
really comes of
they,
them.
Nothing ever comes of them. They talk to Negan in, like, one issue. And they're like, maybe we should let him out. And it never happens. I mean, they meet Rick in the same issue we meet them in.
Right, and you meet them after the time jump.
Yeah, you meet these people after the time jump. So there's, like, 3 years, or that time period where they...
That time jump is, they say, up to 10 years. They never really specify.
But
and, of course, you're not going to see a time jump in the show.
Yeah.
No. No.
But one of the other things I'd like to see happen in the comic, and maybe it's... I keep forgetting his name. He's the is this the store? He was one of the guys that showed up with Abraham. The guy that showed up with Abraham
in the show. Eugene.
Eugene. He's the he's talking to somebody on a CB radio. And I'd like to see, like, you know, maybe people from, like, Europe show up in Alexandria or something like that. You know, people come across the ocean. Yeah. And that would be an interesting dynamic.
And then they definitely get into the point where they're in the comic, they're exploring other places, you know.
Yeah.
You know, one person has a ship that sails out to sea, other stuff.
But it's like Michonne goes out to sea with that person, and they were like going fishing, and they were like making the comment that, you know, when the population's reduced, you know, nature comes back. But, you know, Eugene's talking to somebody on a CB radio, and this person's saying, well, don't tell them you're talking to us. But, you know, it would be interesting if, like, you know, you see how, like, the other parts of the world fared in the zombie apocalypse. I mean, that's one thing I like about Fear the Walking Dead, was how, you know, the West Coast, survivors in the West Coast fared, as opposed to, like, the group over in the East.
You know, and this season just really lost me on Fear the Walking Dead. I really liked the first season. I liked seeing it as it all kind of fell apart. I thought that was cool. But it quickly got predictable.
It did towards the end, but I like the whole, like the last couple episodes, like where the dad got into the fight with Oscar and caused Oscar to be unconscious and his brain was swelling, and somebody took like a power drill and was drilling into his skull to relieve pressure.
But anyway, point is, they definitely I was not highly amused in with the episode, the final season of the episode, or the first season.
I would not say it was an entertaining hour that I've been watching.
And the bad part
I
is
definitely felt like it was a waste of time to watch it. Yeah, like, really?
And the bad part is they made you wait months.
Exactly, yeah.
It was a cliffhanger that was over pretty quickly.
Yeah. And that's part of the problem, was that it was a cliffhanger. That's part of the reason why this is going to get so
like, if they would have done this at the end of last season, would have went over. Because that having happened, what will they do in response to this? Far more intriguing cliffhanger, I think. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, we actually, me and the missus, we checked out a show called Westworld.
Yeah. I'm hearing good things.
I need
very interesting. Yeah. You know, intriguing. You know, and it's originally based on a movie that the screenplay was written by Michael Crichton. And he is helping on the show. Now, of course, it was the old 70s movie.
Yeah. Wasn't it like Yul Brynner was the Man in Black?
Yeah. And in that one, basically, you know, the Man in Black's a gunslinger that... a robotic AI gunslinger that is getting tired of losing, you know, essentially.
Well, I haven't seen it, but
that is the old movie, and it's a little.
I think I've seen some stuff on it and read some stuff on it, but like the Man in Black, who's played by Ed Harris,
the new show, the Man in Black, is not a robot.
Yeah, he made the comment that I pay too much money not to have some fun.
Right,
he made some comment like that.
which you know, the Man in Black, which is, you know, his physical appearance is based off of from the movie, was a robot, I do believe. But it's been really good. Designating Survivor has been really good, and 24-ish since type of way. Not quite as fast-paced, but a little more drama.
They're bringing back 24. I think beginning of next year they're bringing back 24. I'm behind on the latest episodes, but I have watched Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It's actually been pretty good. You have Robbie Reyes, Ghost Rider in there, so it's pretty good. They're asking him if he's inhuman. He's like, "Why do you keep asking me that?" And they're trying to grasp that it's supernatural, which would also tie into Doctor Strange.
Ghost Rider would tie in directly to Doctor Strange.
I'm behind on The Flash, and I'm one episode behind on Legends of Tomorrow. The Legends of Tomorrow is pretty good. The episode I did watch was pretty good. And I've been watching some of the fall 2006 animes. The best one that I like right now is a series called Drifters. Have either of you ever seen Hellsing Ultimate?
No.
By the same animation studio as Hellsing Ultimate. I'm not 100% sure what's going on with it just yet, but it's historical figures from all across history are being sent, like great warriors is what it is, are being sent to a world. And they're not necessarily fighting it out on the world. Some Japanese characters have kind of met up and just kind of hang out, and then like when a village gets attacked, they go save the village. And that's like the first two episodes. There's like a Greek and a Roman general, and the Greek general is lambasting the Roman general. He says, "You stole my tactics." He's like, if I had done it, it would have been done differently. But you're just a pale imitation of what I did. It's a really interesting one. And then there's like these two other animes I've been watching. They're really short. One's like a 15-minute episode. It's a father becomes a superhero. He's like, before he becomes a superhero, he's like this really chauvinistic pretty boy. And when he becomes a superhero, he looks like a big old slob. And he's trying to talk to his daughter, and you can hear what he's saying in his head, but what's coming out of his mouth is like, "Hey, pretty girl, come here and sit on my lap." It's pretty bad. And then there's another one that's a historical anime. It's like a 5-minute anime. It's called Ninja Girl and Samurai Master. And then Ruby, season 4 started up. And they have changed the animation engine on that. And it looks phenomenal. So what have you been watching, Adam?
Lately I haven't been able to watch much TV. I made it a point to watch this episode of The Walking Dead. But usually most of the stuff I watch, I end up having to watch it on Netflix or Hulu. I'm trying to catch up on season 2 of The Flash. I just finished season 2 of Gotham.
Oh, I am watching Gotham. I'm behind on this week's episode.
So what did you think about season 2 of Gotham?
I liked it.
I thought it was alright. I mean,
it sets a lot of groundwork to explain where all these superpowered villains come from.
It does, but then it also explains to me why Batman ends up beating all of these supervillains in the future. It's because he's fighting a whole bunch of geriatrics. Because by the time he ends up fighting them, all these people are going to end up being in their 40s, 50s.
Well, it's the Poison Ivy character in this really, season has been aged.
Yeah, and it really... One of the things that I like about Batman is... There's always this argument to be made by that all of these villains are showing up because Batman is there.
Yeah.
If Batman wasn't there, then all of these villains wouldn't show up.
But
in the show, they're introducing all of these villains, and there's not a Batman anywhere.
Well, we're not necessarily, but by the same premise, they're not necessarily the Batman villains.
Not necessarily.
They're like,
you're
maybe
right.
Precursors, like some, you know, because they still have Hugo Strange, and maybe some, and the Court of Owls is really interested in this work.
Yeah.
But in a way, Wayne Enterprises created these things, and maybe this is the way the show is saying that Bruce takes on that responsibility dealing with the legacy of Wayne Enterprises, this legacy of Wayne Enterprises.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, Indian Hill was funded by Wayne Enterprises via the Court of Owls.
I did like Hugo Strange in season 2.
I thought he did really well.
I thought he was good, but I didn't like the villain in the first half of the season. What was his name? Like Theo?
Oh, Galavant.
Galavant. I didn't like the actor. I thought he was too hokey, I guess. Like he played it a very old school villain way.
Yeah.
Like he's like, when he's trying to act like a good guy, you can tell that he is a bad guy trying to act like a good guy.
He did come off.
It was very over the top, and I didn't like that personally. But you know, overall, I thought it was a fine show.
When he became Azrael, I liked him when he was.
Yeah,
Azrael.
When he's Azrael, he's cool.
He was over the top, and that was pretty good.
Alrighty. Well, it is about that time. Now, any final thoughts?
All right. Outright Geekery will be attending GMX this weekend.
Cool.
I will be the boots on the ground, so to speak. Chanel should be joining me as a photographer, so we'll be covering that. The guest list is kind of sparse compared to previous GMXs, but the voice actress for Marceline from Adventure Time, I forget her name, she will be there, and the voice actor from Steven Universe will be there, and I will try to at least sit in on press junket with them.
And of course, GMX just recently split up, them and the other sister convention, MTAC, split up into two separate entities. And I think in the long run, this will be good for at least one of them.
Well, yeah. There was talk by somebody that used to come to the comic shop that they were thinking about doing away with GMX, and this might be one step in that direction.
Well, they're owned by different people now. That company split.
Okay.
Yeah. Because MTAC was, while it is a much larger one, was having a lot more issues that was preventing GMX from doing a lot of things. And the people that founded GMX wanted to unassociate themselves for a little bit. And I think this will be good for both of them. They can go their own way. So
one doesn't drag down both of them. So
well, and whether it's, you know, there's just a lot. MTAC is a lot more, lot less convention, lot more event for a lot of it. You know, they're very much, they do, you know, a lot of higher
caliber
insurance requirement events.
Yeah, MTAC tends to have bigger names come to it than
they definitely GMX. Usually have bigger names, but they also usually have like all there. Ages.
Huh? I met Glenn there. MTAC.
They tend to have a little more party type things going on.
Yeah, especially after hours.
But
we won't talk about that. I can't take pictures of that anyway.
Can't take pictures of the after hours.
I can't take. No, they won't let press in for the after hours events.
Well, right, and there's definitely. I mean, of course, reasons why.
Yeah, you know. There's definitely reasons why.
But
when they hold a rave.
Yeah.
They have they do have raves at MTAC.
Now, I mean, so you go to MTAC, it's as much for the party as it is the convention, if not more so.
And GMX is more along the lines of an actual fan event.
Yeah, it's actually more about the convention, and they try to keep it more convention and event oriented than GMX. Convention and information oriented versus event oriented, party oriented MTAC. There's nothing right or wrong about either way. It's just two total different business strategies.
Yeah. But we will be covering GMX this weekend, and coverage should be coming through Friday, but definitely we'll have it over the weekend. And just keep checking it back at Outright Geekery for that. And then all your other comic book news, reviews, and information.
All right, I guess it's my turn. For the last couple of weeks, we've been really, really bad about getting Instruments of Destruction out. The show's still going on. We've just been having a very hectic schedule, Jules Gomer and I. But I'm going to try my best to get that show out this weekend. So, Gomer, if you're listening, Sunday.
Well, you know, and that's the thing, you know, I was going to share the pass. I have some free passes to go to a Doctor Strange, see it in IMAX 3D.
Oh,
would you like a couple?
I would love a couple.
I will gladly give them to you. Would you like a couple?
You know, I might have to see if I can take another vacation day.
No, and I would gladly give them to anybody else who showed up for the podcast, but sadly, no, they didn't. And I want y'all to hear this, guys. I hope you're listening. Really. But yeah, I'll distribute some of those later, and we'll probably throw a few in some selected box holders to come in over the weekend. We might have did something a little earlier this morning, but they didn't come till late this evening. Yeah, it was towards the end that they came in the mail. But that's insane. I'm sorry about the infrequency of the podcast here lately. Definitely everybody's had different schedules and all this other jazz going on. I, of course, as of late, have been under the weather, but that is okay. We are still trudging on, and I'm glad to have AKA David and Adam Normal here with me. And check us out. Keep checking in at Comic City 2 in Madison, Tennessee.
Son of Maddie.
Or find us online, comiccity2.com, outrightgeekery.com, Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, LinkedIn, ever, all that jazz.
Live Journal, GeoCities.
Check out our MySpace page. Oh, yeah. All right, see you next time. Good. Same bat channel, same bat time.
Good night, Elaine.